The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Raleigh News and Observer, the Garden Smart e-newsletter, HGTV's Garden e-newsletter, the NC State Extension Garden e-newsletter, and maybe from Reader's Digest 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Garden. We'll start with the Raleigh News and Observer. This article is by Adrian Higgins, titled, Beans, Often Overlooked, Have a Ripe History. I planted an unnamed variety of yellow wax beans in late July, about 2 dozen seeds, and by late summer the vines were so vigorous and fruitful I couldn't keep up with them in the kitchen. The serviet was fine, because with a winning bean like that, you want to stop picking it a few weeks before the end of the growing season. This period allows the beans inside to develop, mature, and ripen. Now, at the garden's end, the pods are wizened and the beans are ready for winter. Some will be saved as seed for next year. The rest will be set aside to use in stews. If I had a big garden, I'd grow many more beans so that I could harvest thousands of dried beans and put them in mason jars. Releasing them from their dried pods would be one of those lovely Saturday morning chores undertaken in a warm room away from, but with a view, of the November drizzle. The dried bean in all its forms has none of the trendiness of kale, blueberries, or antique tomatoes. I find this puzzling because the bean asks so little of us and gives us so much in return. Most varieties will take the heat and humidity of our summer garden, no small thing, and grow as fine little bushes or handsome curtains. Some of them are hardly less than jewels in their forms and coloration. The Hidatsa red Indian bean is the color of coral. Nona Agnes's blue bean seems made of lapis, and my yellow wax bean is now a polished onyx black. Yes, they are gems, waiting in their glass cabinets for a winter soup, or to go back in the ground next May or June. I asked Rosalind Creasy, author of the classic book Edible Landscaping, to name a beautiful bean, and she picked the Christmas Lima, which is mottled maroon and white and valued for its nuttiness. It has a lot more flavor than white limas, she said. Limas, and runner beans in particular, have spectacular markings when dried, but so does the common green bean in all its guises. Some form pods as strikingly marked as the seeds within. Bird egg beans have seeds with dark red stripes. The pod is cream, mottled with a pink raspberry hue. Dragon's tongue is a Dutch wax bean with pods of purple striations. Italian Borlotti beans are similar, grown as shell beans and, when ripe, for winter soups and stews. It's funny they aren't revered more, said Lee Butala, executive director of Seed Savers Exchange, the Decorah, Iowa organization dedicated to preserving America's heirloom varieties of fruits and vegetables. If beans were fussier to grow, use, or store, they might get more respect. Butala is not among the indifferent. Beans might be our way of staving off Armageddon, he said. This is only part hyperbole. A bean named the Cherokee Trail of Tears sustained, to some degree, the Cherokee Indians forced from their tribal lands in the 19th century. The black-seeded pole bean is still available from heirloom nurseries such as Baker Creek. Because they are self-pollinating, beans will come true from seed. And the dried bean is eminently portable, not only between continents, but generations. There are thousands of heirloom varieties of beans in the United States, and each one has a story. Many originate from American Indian tribes and were adopted and altered through selection by European settlers. Others may have started out in the Americas, but were further developed in the Old World before returning with immigrants. The bean is central to the fairy tale about Jack and the Beanstalk, but the histories of each variety tend to be fabulous themselves. In the 1860s, a southwestern Pennsylvania matriarch was preparing a goose for the oven and found beans in its craw. They were duly recovered and planted, still available. The Mustoler wild goose bean is brown and white and used for soups and as a baked bean. Her family grew it out for six generations, Butala said. William Boys Weaver is an author, food historian, and gardener in Devon, Pennsylvania, who has worked to preserve regional bean varieties, particularly in the mid-Atlantic, along with other heirloom vegetables, in the Roughwood seed collection started by his grandfather, though named later. Among them is the Indian Hanna bean, saved from extinction by his grandfather. Its original grower was Hannah Freeman, said to be the last surviving Lenape Indian in Chester County, Pennsylvania. The collection also holds another Native American bean, the Potawatomi Pole Lima. The beans are red and black. It's just very pretty. And it keeps that color pattern when you cook it, Weaver said. Limas like the long, hot season of the South, but this variety does well in the Midwest, he said. And now from the Garden Smart e-newsletter, The Dirt on Growing Cabbage by Joan Casanova for Bonnie Plants. If you did not plant cabbage in the fall, you'll have another opportunity early spring. Cabbage is a cool season vegetable, which can be planted in early spring and fall. It's part of the cole crop family, Brassica oleracea, which includes broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, collards, kale, and kohlrabi. Cole crops love cool weather and are hardy enough to tolerate a frost. When nipped by frost, flavor is sweetened. The trick to growing cabbage is steady, uninterrupted growth, rich soil, proper watering, and fertilization. Top tips for growing cabbage. Supplement your soil. Buy an inexpensive soil test kit at almost any garden retailer. Soil test results determine what your soil may be lacking. Then you can easily amend and supplement your soil accordingly. Remember, your soil is the foundation for the health and well-being of your plants. Use transplants like Bonnie Plants. All the hard work is already done for you, and you'll harvest 6 weeks sooner than starting from seed. Proper spacing will be identified on plant tags. Feed your food plants. They're hungry. Use a good time-release vegetable food, 14-14-14, prior to planting, or feed regularly with a plant food of choice. Be sure to follow label directions and water wisely. Cabbage demands even moisture to produce good heads. Water regularly, applying 1 to 1.5 inches of water a week if it does not rain. Water in the early part of the day at soil level and avoid wetting the leaves. Never put your plants to bed wet to avoid plant stress. Mulch cabbage plants with compost, finely ground leaves, or finely ground bark to keep the soil cool, moist, and keep weeds down. Patrol for pests. Holes in cabbage leaves are a sure sign cabbage worms or cabbage loopers may be attacking. Look for green pests on the underside of leaves where they like to hide. Pick them off quickly before they munch holes in your cabbage. Harvest hint. Squeeze the cabbage head to test whether it's ready to harvest. If the head feels solid and firm, it is ready to be cut from the base of the plant. If it feels loose, leave it in the garden to harden up a little longer. When you're ready to plant cabbage, start before the temperatures rise. If you live where the weather heats up fast, fall is your best bet to plant, or about 8 weeks before your first frost. Bonnie Plants offers a great selection of cabbage varieties. Learn about more than 250 varieties on their site, www.bonnieplants.com. And get kids growing cabbages, too. Vegetable gardening teaches kids where food comes from, healthy eating, and gets them outdoors, engaging with nature. A great way to get them started is the National Bonnie Plants Third Grade Cabbage Program. It's free to any third grade classroom in the country. Third grade teachers can register by signing up for the 2018 program. In 1996, Bonnie Plants initiated the third grade cabbage program in Union Springs, Alabama. By 2002, it included participation in the 48 contiguous states. Each year, Bonnie Plants trucks more than 1 million free O.S. Cross cabbage plants to third grade classrooms across the country. O.S. stands for oversized. O.S. Cross cabbages can grow upwards of 40 pounds, making the initiative quite engaging and exciting for kids. Third grade teachers distribute the 2-inch cabbage plants and growing instructions Bonnie Plants delivers to students to carry home and grow. At the end of the growing season, teachers select a class winner based on size and appearance. And that submission, digital image of child with their cabbage, is entered in a statewide scholarship drawing. The 48 state winners are randomly selected by each state's Office of the Department of Agriculture, and Bonnie Plants awards a $1,000 scholarship towards education to one student in each state. And now from HGTV's Gardens e-newsletter, low-maintenance perennials. Easy-care perennials that do not need frequent division to look their best. Ruffled Velvet Siberian Iris. Siberian iris blooms in late spring and early summer in many hues, including purple, pink, yellow, and white. Foliage forms a mound with a grassy texture. Siberian iris does not typically need dividing for 5 to 10 years after planting. Divide clumps that show diminished growth or smaller blooms. You can also divide to multiply plants. Divide plants in early spring as growth begins or before your region's rainy season. Old-fashioned bleeding heart. A traditional shade garden favorite, old-fashioned bleeding heart features beautiful pink blossoms in mid to late spring. Blue-green leaves tend to disappear by midsummer as plants go dormant, especially in warmer regions. Planted in part to full shade in moist, humusy soil, plants can form spectacular shrubby mounds up to 10 feet across. Bleeding hearts rarely need dividing, except to curtail spread or multiply plants. Winter Glow Virginia. The large leaves of this perennial form a good-looking ground cover through the seasons. Bright green spring and summer color fades to reddish-purple in winter. The winter hues display best in warmer regions, grow in part to full shade sight in moist soil enriched with organic matter. Divide plants every 4 to 5 years, or when clumps become open and bare in the center. Jack Frost Brunera. Silver, heart-shaped leaves with green veins add sparkle to the garden all season long. Light blue blooms appear above leaves in spring. Choose Jack Frost Brunera for a low-maintenance ground cover that's slug, deer, and rabbit-resistant. Plants thrive in consistently moist soil in part shade. Divide plants as clumps enlarge and outgrow their spaces. Elegant Candy Daylily. Sun-loving and low-maintenance, Elegant Candy is a reblooming daylily, opening flowers all season long. Give this pastel beauty full sun to part shade in moist, well-draining soil rich in organic matter. Flowering tends to dwindle as plants age. Keep the show going strong by dividing plants every 4 years or so. Divide plants in early spring or after flowering. Cut back leaves if you divide plants later in the season. Prairie Splendor Purple Coneflower. Purple coneflower boasts striking blooms with reflexed purple petals that surround a spiky orange-gold cone. This drought-tolerant perennial is native to the central Midwest. Blossoms beckon butterflies and bees. Plants benefit from dividing when clumps enlarge and flowering slows. You can also lift and transplant young seedlings that form around the base of the mother plant. May Night Salvia. For striking dark blue to deep purple flower spikes, tuck May Night Salvia into your garden. Plants grow to 24 inches tall. Place them in the middle of a border for a strong show. Give plants moist soil that drains well in all seasons. Flowers appear in early summer. Plants rebloom with deadheading. Divide plants every 4 to 6 years. Watch for signs of reduced flowering or clumps falling open as clues that it's time to divide. Black-eyed Susan Goldster. Tough and reliable. Black-eyed Susan fills summer with cheery blooms that look good in the garden or a vase. Plants are a snap to grow. Just give them average soil and full sun. Clumps spread quickly when plants are happy. Remove edges of clumps in spring to keep plants in bounds. Black-eyed Susan usually does not need dividing, but it's a good idea to do so at the 4-year mark to rejuvenate clumps. Bright Eyes Garden Phlox. Pastel pink blossoms with hot pink eyes sizzle in the mid to late summer garden on rich in organic matter on Bright Eyes Garden Phlox. Sweetly fragrant flowers attract butterflies and hummingbirds. Full sun and moist soil, rich in organic matter, produces the healthiest growth. This phlox shows good mildew resistance. Divide large clumps when flowering diminishes or when you want to multiply the plant in your garden. Vulcan Hosta. Strong white centers surrounded by green edges make Vulcan Hosta leaves shine in the garden. Tuck plants into partial shade for best growth. Morning sun with afternoon shade or high dappled shade is ideal. Lavender blooms in mid to late summer lure hummingbirds. Divide plants when they're fully established. Wait at least 3 years after planting it if you are dividing to multiply plants. Otherwise, wait until 5 to 8 years before dividing. Blazing Star Cobalt. Count on Blazing Star to introduce vertical interest to your garden with its purple flower spikes. Butterflies and other pollinators mob blooms. This Blazing Star variety tops out at 3 feet. Dig and divide large clumps to multiply plants or when growth and flowering decreases. Divide in spring as shoots appear. And Hibiscus Cranberry Crush. Dinner plate-sized cranberry blooms give this hardy hibiscus a breathtaking quality from midsummer through early fall. Cranberry Crush performs best when soil stays consistently moist and full sun bathes the plant. Plants grow 3 to 4 feet tall. Cut stems back to 3 to 4 inches in late winter. This hibiscus should not need dividing for a good 8 to 10 years. Divide when flowering slows or to multiply plants. Peach-leaved bellflower. Bellflower opens blue or white blooms in early to midsummer. Flower stems make great additions to garden bouquets. Give plants average soil in full sun to part shade. In warmer zones, protect plants from hot afternoon sun. Divide this bellflower every 4 years. Sooner if plant growth diminishes. Also, harvest and transplant offset plants surrounding the mother plant. Now, plants for cleaning indoor air. Since Americans spend most of their time indoors, healthy air quality should be a top priority. Bamboo palm. Since the bamboo palm, or reed palm, prefers part sun or shade, it makes a great houseplant with the added benefit of aiding in the removal of harmful elements such as benzene and formaldehyde. Chinese evergreen. The Chinese evergreen is an easy care plant that thrives in low to medium light. It generally grows 1 or 2 feet. Though it helps to maintain healthy air quality in the home, it is important to note the Chinese evergreen contains an irritant that can be toxic to pets. English ivy is a classically elegant choice, excellent for removing some harmful chemicals found in the home. It can grow in full shade to full sun with proper care, likely to survive several years. Gerbera daisy, when placed indoors, this popular annual is useful in removing benzene and providing mood-enhancing beauty to the home. Keep in mind the Gerbera daisy does best in warm temperatures at 75 degrees Fahrenheit or higher. Dracaena fragrance, Janet Craig. This indoor plant can grow up to 10 feet tall and does well in full shade to partial sun. Janet Craig is also a good option for an indoor plant as it is easy to care for and grows best in average temperatures. Dracaena marginata, with a leaf color that ranges from green to purple. This plant would be a gorgeous addition indoors or outdoors. It would also fit right in at the office as it can tolerate low light. Mascane / corn plant, proven to help remove formaldehyde. The mascane / corn plant is one of the most popular varieties of Dracaenas for its lovely foliage that ranges from green to yellow. They look stunning in tree form, but can also be grown as shrubs. Mother-in-law's tongue, a hardy succulent. Mother-in-law's tongue is a great houseplant for beginners and can survive in some of the toughest conditions, including a wide variety of light and temperatures. However, be careful not to overwater or to not water at all. Pot mum. good for removing benzene, the pot mum is also a colorful addition to the home in fall when many other flowering plants are past their prime. Peace lily, known for its ability to fight against toxic gases such as formaldehyde and carbon monoxide. Peace lilies are relatively easy to care for and even show signs of drooping when they need to be watered. They can be mildly toxic to pets and humans, so it is important to wash your hands after touching the plant. And now, from the NC State Extension Gardener e-newsletter, this is an event coming up. The second Saturday, Seed the Corridor in Raleigh, North Carolina. This happens on the second Saturdays of the month. First one will be January the 13th, from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m., on Blunt and Person Streets, from South Park through downtown Raleigh and up to Mordecai. A monthly celebration of local food plus community. Through monthly exhibitions, showcases, events, and demos, community members can explore new ways to engage with and support local food. If you are not from Raleigh, come to bring ideas to share, network, and gather ideas to take back to your community. And from 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Garden, the All-American Tree. The native hickory has long held a place in American history and folklore, growing strong and stately. It symbolized the country's steadfastness and pride. Andrew Jackson, a general in the War of 1812, was so tough that his militiamen nicknamed him Old Hickory. It is believed that many of the rails Abe Lincoln split were of hickory, which grew plentifully on the Indiana frontier. The tree also literally united the nation. The ties that held the railroad rails linking east and west were hewn from hickory timber. Thomas Jefferson championed the largest member of the hickory family, the pecan, and planted 200 trees at Monticello in 1794. That year, he sent the nuts to George Washington, who planted a pecan grove at Mount Vernon. Sadly, none of the original trees still stand. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.